This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Warning, this story discusses domestic violence. If you or someone you know is affected, please seek help. Call 1-800-RESPECT. That's 1-800-737-732. Relationships Australia on 1300 364 277 or QLife on 1800 184 527. Here's a Joy Law podcast from Jack and Dean on Joy.
And joining us live in the studio today, we have two guests. We have Monica and we have Stephen. Welcome, team.
Thank you.
Now, we're talking, last week we started to explore the issue of domestic violence in the LGBTI community when relationships break down.
That's right.
And it's quite a difficult and sensitive time.
It is.
And people can also be quite fearful at times.
Yeah, absolutely. So safety planning is a key part of I guess, what we do as family lawyers. And I wanted Steve to come along, Steve Wilson from the Protective Group, because we often partner and work together really to keep clients safe at a difficult time. So what we know about family violence is that people leaving a relationship are most at risk in the immediate period leading up to the separation and immediately following. So planning how to leave, when to leave, where to go, and trying to keep families in their home and getting the perpetrator removed can be a strategy that we try and employ. But, you know, family violence is endemic in Australia. You know, we're losing on average one woman a week.
Which is just outrageous, murdered. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And if you look at the number of trans deaths as well, I don't know what the count is, but I know it's not a good count.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Well, I was looking into the statistics in the LGBTIQ community, and the bottom line is there's not a lot of accurate statistics, and I think that's because the focus of research really has been on male and female violence, and male being the perpetrators of violence. But my understanding is the statistics are same throughout the community, and certainly my experience is, you know, probably every third or fourth client that I see will tell me about family violence and have a concern around family violence.
And as you say, it's very useful to plan. But when you say planning, I'm thinking that's quite a rational process. It's non-emotional, it's rational. But often with domestic and family violence, it can be fairly emotional. You can be heightened emotion.
Absolutely. And I think the outcome that we're seeing and why I'm so passionate about this area in particular and the work that I do is that we often see families escaping family violence and we see them leaving. And often they're forced to go in to emergency accommodation. And that means they're leaving their support networks, they're leaving their friendships, children are being taken out of school, and that's really what's got to stop. So what planning does, the difference that planning makes, is that we can get an intervention order before the separation occurs. We can get the perpetrator removed from the home. We can keep the family in. And the key part that my friend Stephen does is to keep the family safe in the home.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I the only types of help that I know of is where people leave and they have to seek out emergency help. But how do you stop that person from coming back with just an intervention order?
So an intervention order is a piece of paper unless you get it enforced. The reality of once you enforce that document is that you've got clients going to jail. You've got people being jailed for breaches of intervention orders. And one of the topics we wanted to talk about today, and I really want Steve to talk about his background, why he does what he does, and a bit more about his business, but, you know, is just making sure that clients are and people are feeling safer, are able to stay in their communities and are really able to feel protected and safe where they are. So intervention orders are pieces of paper unless you really pursue them and enforce them. You enforce them by calling 000, you call the police, and the police can take any action they deem necessary to ensure the family's safe.
And so, Sim, what can you do to help out as well?
Well, maybe if I just give a bit of the background. About 7 years ago, two of us, both ex-VicPol detectives, from quite a few years ago, we started a company called Protective Group, and originally it was around investigations and general security services, and we thought we really wanted to do something a little bit different and looked more around protecting vulnerable people. And vulnerable people were people that were suffering homelessness, mental health or family violence. So from 7 years ago to now, I'm not rolling the clock forward, we now nationally do all the work for the Salvation Army, for the Safe in the Home program, which is the answer to your how do you keep people safe. And that's grown exponentially. And I think we've looked after roughly around 5,500 women and children in the last 6 to 7 years.
Wow.
At keeping them safe. And we discussed earlier on, Monica asked why we did it. And look, we did it because we had a passion to help people. And, you know, we've both got children and you sort of think, well, you know, and I suppose we don't like bullies as yeah. well. And I think that sort of makes you think, well, let's see it how we can mm. help.
So how does it work day to day? What kind of with someone working for you, what would they be doing out in the field?
Okay, well, we do a lot of the assessments ourselves. So maybe if I can give in, maybe if I do an example.
Yeah.
Roughly 2 or 3 years ago, we had a referral from a family violence service. We went out to the house. We met the lady. She had been in a relationship with a male perpetrator. It was a fairly violent, physical, sexual abuse sort of relationship. She had split up with him a year or two down the track. She had formed a relationship, a same-sex relationship. He had taken great offence to this. They still had some children. The children were residing with her. He was stalking her. He was reporting her to DHS that she was doing the wrong thing.
Oh, boy.
So, we basically went out there. We do a comprehensive assessment on the property. We talk to her as the victim. We look at the perpetrator behaviour and we say, okay, we could see there was nothing wrong. She was a great mum, no environmental neglect, everything was great. So we looked at strategies then to keep her safe and reduce the stalking. So it was about looking at her own safety planning. It was about putting maybe some cameras up into the house. It was looking at a duress alarm that we can give her, that she can press the button, it goes through to the monitoring centre of the police, it can respond quickly. But that it saw there was a fair bit of tech abuse as well there. So it was around...
So what abuse? Technology abuse.
Oh,
right.
My word. I would say probably 8 out of 10 people we go and see now is some form of technology abuse. Gosh. We're finding trackers in cars. We've found a drone positioned above a woman's skylight above her bedroom recently in Sydney.
No way.
That was spying through the skylight on her. Oh, yeah. Hidden cameras. Yeah.
It's amazing what you don't know about technology. So I've had clients recently that I've had to refer to Steve where computers have been accessed remotely, phones have been accessed remotely. Obviously, you've got your Apple iCloud family accounts that are being linked, which means you can access text messages or, you know, browsing history.
Do you recommend putting
a
sticker on your webcam?
A bit more than that, actually.
Yeah. More high-tech, okay.
Yeah, a bit more high-tech.
Yeah, basic level knowledge.
Yeah, but that was just one instance. But a lot of the cases we deal with, it's just a matter of going out and looking at how can we keep people safe. Because if I talk from the passionate side of things, I think it's something it's going to be a generation or generations before we see it changing. So we sort of emphasise now keeping people safe. Until things change, let's look at how we can keep them safe in their homes.
But the basics, I guess, in security assessments are you've got to change the locks.
Yeah, changing. Yeah.
Security cameras, making sure there's a lock on the manhole, things like that. So, you know, I had a case actually where a perpetrator actually got in through the roof and got into the home, broke into the home through the manhole. So basic things like that. And I guess what Stephen brings from his past experience working in the Victoria Police as a detective is he looks at it as a potential crime scene. How could this go badly, and what can I do to stop it?
Oh, so
going
like
badly.
Worst case scenario planning, then work back.
Yeah,
from
that. That's really
good. But I think changing the locks is a really good one.
It's pretty basic, but a lot of people don't do it.
No, well, that exactly. Yeah,
and I think that's important too. I think that as detectives in past lives, you tend to look at things that every house we're going to, we see it as a crime scene. Or a potential crime scene, because something has gone wrong there that's created a crime.
It must be a hoot at a house party. I'm not inviting you to my place. You'll be bringing your yellow tape.
He's got some good stories, though, so it's helped a lot of people. But I think where it works really well with family lawyers is if we can plan when the separation occurs, so instead of waiting until the worst moment and they flee the home, if we can sort of, and I hate to say this, but I've had to initiate quite a few separations. Mm. So we get the intervention order, we get the protective group in once we've got the intervention order, we make sure the perpetrator's been served, and then we, if we need to, take legal action. So the combination of all of that safety planning means the family remains in the home, we can get the financial support, we've got the security covered, and hopefully we're changing, you know, lives and families' lives post-separation by doing that.
What are some of the signs? Like, when do you know that it's a good time to start putting that into place or discussing whether you need any intervention orders?
It's funny. I had a client that I actually referred to the protective group. probably last year, and it's a client that came in and she was feeling quite upset about the state of her relationship, and really the more she started to tell us and her story unfolded, red flags were popping up for us. Mm. So there was potential mental health issues, there was drug use and drug addiction and things like that. So it triggered us to, on that day, go and get her an intervention order, and she hadn't even had a conversation with her partner about separating.
Wow.
Yeah, I was going to say on that point too that controlling behaviour can start well before the relationship finishes.
Yeah, yeah.
He's already following her. He's already got hidden cameras in the house. He's already got trackers in the car. And nowadays we have spyware that you can even remotely put on someone's phone where you can watch all their emails, read their text, and you can see everything that they're doing as well.
You've got Bluetooth. I mean, yeah. Bluetooth and things like that.
Yeah, mine's always on.
Yeah.
I lose my keys all the time. I've got a tracker for that.
And, of course, some of the examples we're referring to here is husband and wife. But, of course, this isn't just a heterosexual thing.
No. And I was discussing this earlier again with Monica that people often say to us, well, look, you've looked after 5,000 women.
Mm, mm.
But what we need to remember is a lot of the government funding, especially around the federal national plans, and they're more related to the funding is more for keeping women and children safe. So what you're seeing is a lot of men falling through the cracks. And, yes. And people will say, but you're not getting men, so it's not a problem with men. Well, it is. But unfortunately, the funding doesn't cover it. So men will get perpetrator behaviour programs and some support programs when it comes to programs like keeping them safe at home, because men are suffering the same thing. It's not as much, no.
So it's about relationships, not necessarily about gender.
Correct.
Yeah. Fantastic. If you have any questions about this very sensitive and delicate topic, by all means, you could email us through to joy.org.au or on air at joy.org.au catch up on the podcast. We'll be podcasting this on the weekend.
If this story has raised any concerns for you or someone you know is being affected by domestic violence, please seek help. Call Lifeline on 131114, the Domestic Violence Hotline on 1800RESPECT, that's 1800 737 732, Relationships Australia on 1300 364 277, or QLife on 1800 184 527.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.